First, remember being a kid and thinking you couldn't wait to be an adult? Well, maybe now that you're an adult, you may be thinking it's not all it was cracked up to be. There are the bills to pay, responsibilities to deal with, a lot of serious stuff in general. What if we could recapture some of what made childhood special and fun? Our next guest has some advice. Dr. Anthony DeBenedet is a practicing physician with an interest in behavioral science. His new book is Playful Intelligence, The Power of Living Lightly in a Serious World. He says that playfulness, while often overlooked, can actually be a really important quality for adults, and by harnessing playful qualities like wonder, imagination, and humor, we can bring some of that childhood magic back to our day-to-day lives. Dr. DeBenedet, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks, Rob, for having me.
Now, this was very personal for you. You were feeling, you write in your book, like you were in too serious a moment, like you'd lost some of that playfulness. Talk about what led you to tackle this issue.
Yeah, I felt like, that's exactly it. I felt like my life was just kind of blurring into this frazzled mosaic of kind of busyness and too much seriousness, exhaustion, perfectionism. And, you know, as I look back, I think I was actually on the verge of full burnout. I was like 70% there. And what I realized as I dug a little deeper was that it felt like the playful kind of parts of my personality were being erased in a lot of ways by the intensity and kind of seriousness of daily adult life. And so I decided to try to dig into that and what that, you know, what playfulness looks like in adult life, and interviewed a lot of people who live with a lighter step, and then also looked at some research to try to determine that.
And there's an irony here, because I think a lot of the qualities of playfulness you talk about, things like imagination, fun, humor, we may think of as frivolous or less important stuff, but you write it could be really important for our health, our happiness, our well-being in the short and long run.
Yeah, and I think that was probably, you hit probably the biggest surprise I had in doing the research and actually writing the book, and that was that I was expecting to find these qualities to kind of work like they did when we were kids. And what I found was that these qualities work in different ways now that we're adults. So, for example, when we're kids, our imagination and those circuits in our brain that create make-believe worlds and create puppet shows and the like, now actually as adults help us to reframe problems or to empathize with other people. But it's interesting neuroscience in that when we exercise our imagination in a playful way, even as adults, what happens is those circuits help us to use it in those kind of more maybe harder situations when we have to reframe a problem or kind of really stand next to someone who's going through something difficult.
I want to stay with imagination because that's one of five different kind of practices you talk about as being an important part of playfulness. And I want to use that because imagination, it sounds easy on paper. You give a really interesting practical example. I think it was a banker, somebody who worked at a bank, very worried about a bank robbery. His wife had survived one. And that doesn't sound like something on the surface of it that imagination is going to help somebody work through the stress of. Can you talk about how that ended up working out?
Yeah, so that's an example that's used in the book. And the idea is when there's a problem or a stress that you're thinking about or something that you encounter, such as, you know, thinking about if you're a bank employee thinking about a bank robbery, the first thing to do is to actually think about, you know, what could this problem actually, you know, what is the likelihood, number one, of this problem actually happening? And then number two is, how could this problem help me actually, you know, think differently in terms of the actual situation? And the book goes into kind of more details on the actual bank robbery bank robbery example, but the idea is that by thinking about that most bank robberies statistically end in no one getting harmed and you know, a peaceful resolution in that sense. It's not like the bank robber just walks out, but most of the time most people don't get harmed. There's not a, you know, it's not like what we see in the movies. But for that particular person who was going through kind of a reframing exercise with his imagination, he learned just through that and kind of thinking about kind of some of the details and how to think about that process helped him reframe other problems in his life.
And this idea that imagination, when we've got whatever the looming problem or fear is, using imagination so that we're not just dreading it, but thinking, I think in that case, one bit of imagination was, how could I help people? How can I use this as an opportunity to help others? How can I bounce back if this thing happens? So letting that imagination take us through and past the thing we're fearing.
That's exactly right. And the other, just to highlight the other case example in that, is that, you know, there, when I talk about one of the greatest corporate upheavals in U.S. history, which was when AT&T went through divestiture, and specifically the case of Illinois Bell. This is in the early 1980s. And what was found over a 12-year longitudinal study was that those who coped with that stress of that upheaval the best were using their imagination to kind of reframe what could potentially, you know, be a good part of that upheaval for them personally. That was really the big data point that came out of that study. And I think, you know, it's more than, you know, you hear about people talking, you know, well, let's just make lemonade out of lemons. It's not exactly that. It's not living with this kind of idealistic optimism or this kind of blind optimism, but it is saying, you know, most problems, we can find some lessons in them and think about how to use them to our advantage.
Talking to Dr. Anthony DeBenedet, his new book is called Playful Intelligence. Before we move on from imagination, how can we practice it? We can't just set aside hours a day to sit and daydream. I don't know if that would be productive. What kind of, I guess, exercises can we do to build that imagination back up?
Right. The two that I tell most folks to do, and this was one that I was guilty of not doing, is that one is reading fiction. I'm a heavy nonfiction reader, and I didn't have a lot of fiction next to my nightstand. But there's pretty good data showing that if we add some fiction to our reading list, that, now of course, the book that we're talking about is nonfiction,
right.
But the fiction piece, reading fiction, actually really exercises the different parts of the cortex that really are used for imaginative processes. The other thing I do mention, like you said, is daydreaming. There's good data that shows that if we take even a few minutes to just kind of drift, it's not falling asleep, but just kind of drift off and to kind of help our mind just kind of, you know, let loose a little bit, that also helps exercise the imagination, almost as if the imagination is a muscle in that sense.
I want to move on to another one of the properties you talk about that can help boost our playfulness. And this one I tried while I was reading your book, actually, spontaneity.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was sitting in my office starting to read your book, and I thought, it's beautiful outside. I'm going to break my routine a little bit. I'm going to go downstairs and sit outside and read in this great weather. I don't know how much it boosted my playfulness, but talk about that spontaneity and interrupting our routines and how that can boost our playfulness.
Yeah, so spontaneity is probably my favorite chapter in that, because I was, when I went into this book, was a very rigid kind of person, very tied to my schedule.
Me too.
And didn't like to have a lot of changes in that. And then one thing to say is that you'd have to have somewhat of a schedule. I mean, we all need, you know, some ruts in our life to kind of keep us moving and get us home at night. But the idea behind spontaneous behaviors is to find little ways to kind of disrupt things a little bit. For instance, sitting at a different place at your dinner table, taking a little bit different route home for work that's not going to be as, you know, that's not going to increase your commute time necessarily, but trying something a little bit different in that sense. And what happens with spontaneity, the two big benefits are that when the best opportunity for spontaneity to really work for us, playful spontaneity, is when something doesn't happen exactly in our day according to our schedule as we planned. Because that little moment of, are we going to get mad or get angry or get upset, or are we going to try to ricochet in a different direction, are we going to try and be mentally flexible, is really spontaneity working, being able to bounce in a different direction. And then the other big way that I found that spontaneity really works in our life is to help us live more generously. Very interesting economic research on this, and that when we make a little faster decision, a little more spontaneous decision, we're more likely to live generously, both with our money as well as our time. And there's a then the book goes into this a little bit. There's a lot of mental health and physical health benefits to that. So,
talking to Dr. Anthony DeBenedet, author of the new book, Playful Intelligence. He says we'd all be a little better off with more playfulness in our lives. He's giving us some advice on how to live lighter in a serious world. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you make room and time for playfulness in your life? Are there ways you found to insert more imagination, more wonder, more spontaneity into your daily routine? Or to put it another way, how do you try and relive maybe some of that magic of childhood as an adult? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Dr. Anthony DeBenedet is with us, author of the new book, Playful Intelligence. He says playfulness, while we often overlook it, he says it's an important quality for adults. There's a lot we can and maybe should try to do to bring a little more playfulness into our lives, good for our health and happiness. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you need some help? Do you need some advice on how to do some of what Dr. DeBenedet is talking about? Do you have something that harnesses the power of your imagination, maybe on a daily basis at work, as a hobby, maybe? Can we be better at taking ourselves a little less seriously? Do you think you have a good sense of humor that you share with the world? Are you sociable with others in a positive way? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. And Anthony, I mentioned sociability there. That is another one of your properties of playfulness. How do we socialize? How do we become more sociable in this playful way?
Yeah, I think that what I found with the research I was doing in interviewing playfully intelligent people is that it's not necessarily that these folks who live a little bit on the lighter side of the coin are extroverts. In fact, I've interviewed a lot of people who were introverts, but who had a playfully kind of sociability or social way that they exchanged with other people. And what I mean by that is there were two characteristics that came up time and time again in the interviews, and one was that their first impressions are held in check. So when they meet someone, they aren't doing knee-jerk stereotype kind of box, you know, putting people in a box. They're really staying open in the social exchange, and that helps them have a high-quality interaction with the person that's in front of them. And the other big thing was that there's a lot of humility. There's not a lot of talking about themselves. There's a lot of self-deprecation. And humility is a big kind of common, you know, cornerstone of their social interactions. And that, I think when that happens, it lets people, you know, it lets the other person know that your guard is down and their guard comes down. And that's really what the essence of playfulness and play is about, is being able to say, you know, it's safe here for us to talk and for us to connect in that sense from a relationship standpoint.
And you're coming at this as a doctor, and you've got examples of, I think, patients who, even in the face of a terminal disease, are happier because they embrace these properties, but also as physicians working with patients, approaching the social connection in the way you're talking about can really make a big difference. Can you talk about that a little?
Yeah, I think that's a critical point, because, you know, when people have life-threatening or terminal illnesses, it's not to say that these kind of behaviors are going to cure them or, you know, make, you know, increase lifespan or anything like that. But it definitely is true that their experience with, you know, with their suffering, with their disease, is improved. And I think that's, you know, I've seen it countless times around the bedside, especially in really intense critical moments when there's a little bit of playfulness that comes in. Maybe there's a funny memory that's recalled, or something that happened earlier in the day that was, you know, a moment of wonder. And those kind of little play breaks or playfulness amidst the great seriousness that's happening is a way for everyone to connect who's around the bedside, and also a way for everyone to have a little bit of psychological distance too, which is healthy, with the stress and with the seriousness that's looming.
I think people might hear this and think, oh, this is just kind of like that empty sort of positive thinking or even denial of problems. That's not where you're going with this. A lot of the people you profile, they're fully aware of the problems they're dealing with in their lives, their health, whatever.
You're exactly right. I mean, I think that, you know, if there is, you're right. I mean, I think that the book on the surface could be, you know, one criticism could be that, well, this is just, you know, blind optimism or too idealistic. And my response to that is that, you know, we're all a little bit different. We all have mixes of pessimism and optimism and realism. And the idea is that you can, I believe, and I think that personality research shows this as well, that you can control your responses to some degree. It's not all like genetically hardwired into us. Probably 50% is, but the other 50% is our experiences and kind of our approach to different situations. There's no doubt about that.
Talking to Dr. Anthony DeBenedet, his new book is Playful Intelligence, The Power of Living Lightly in a Serious World. Another one of the properties you're hoping to have people embrace is wonder, having a sense of wonder in the world. And that, you know, it's easy to think back as a kid and being, you know, blown away by some cool new thing, new experience. How can we as adults get back into that?
Yeah, I think that's the wonder is a great example of what I think we need to do, or what I found, you know, in the research that I did, was that we need to decrease our threshold a little bit for wonder, as well as humor probably too, if we want to kind of start balancing out some of that seriousness with more playfulness and playful behaviors. And what that means is that wonder is fantastic in the sense of it shows really the contrast between how it worked as a child and how it works as an adult really well. When we were children, wonder was all about curiosity and launching us into orbits of learning. Whereas when we're adults, wonder is actually a grounding force in our life. It slows us down. It allows us time to regroup and reflect and to kind of become more inspired and trusting and supportive. And what I would say is if it always takes the Grand Canyon to bring you to a state of wonder, then it might be time to kind of rethink that a little bit and say, well, what if I just slow down a little bit and see if something outside or a child's actions or something like that can get me back to feeling a state of wonder. I think that, right, as adults, we get to a point where nothing really inspires us unless we're, like I said, you know, at some major, you know, theatrical performance or some major wonder of nature. And I think that wonder is all around us when we really start kind of looking for it and listening for it too.
Yeah, it sounds easier said than done though. How do we recalibrate like that? How do we lower our threshold for wonder?
Yeah, I think, you know, In the book, I talk about kind of these three finding the minis is what I think the word that I use is mini. And the idea is to look for the mini moments around you that could actually be in children and, you know, many people, and look at their expressions as a good place to start. Watch a child and see the wonder, because everything's wondrous for a child, and see that novelty. And that'll help kind of as a reminder of how it's important to keep a low threshold for wonder. But then the other thing is, remember perhaps a positive memory from your childhood when you were small. You know, maybe it was, you know, some joy that you felt while you were playing a favorite game with a childhood pal. Or maybe it's a family tradition that you remember feeling, you know, having a warm feeling about. That exercise of kind of connecting you, you know, connecting back to your childhood will also remind you what it feels like to have a low threshold for wonder. I think it is a lot about observing those mini moments of wonder that are around you, you know, often in children, thinking back to those positive moments of wonder when you were a child, and that'll help the kind of rehabilitation of your wonder threshold.
In our last minute, Dr. DeBenedet, you started this process feeling like your life was too serious. Having done all this research, having talked to all these people who exemplify playfulness in one way or another, are you able to practice what you're preaching here?
I would say that I am better than when I started. I don't think I'd recommend writing a book to stave off burnout, but I think that I am better, but it's still a work in progress. I will say that having the principles and the awareness in my mind does help me on a daily basis, but I am by far from there yet. I mean, I think it's a lifelong process, especially once we become adults and we kind of move to our, you know, our end chapters to kind of try to balance that seriousness out with keeping some lightness around too. So,
we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Rob, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
That's Dr. Anthony DeBenedet. He's a practicing physician with an interest in behavioral science. We've been talking about his new book. It's called Playful Intelligence, The Power of Living Lightly in a Serious World. If you have a story to share about how you've maybe been able to do some of the things he's talked about, embracing your imagination, your sense of humor, your sociability, spontaneity, or sense of wonder, still love to hear from you. You can email your story to us. It's ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Have you found a way to be playful, maybe just a little bit playful in a mostly serious world? Again, email ideas@WPR.org. Love to see your story there.